is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
La 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 la. La 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 la. La 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 la. I represent Bahamian people. I'm from
Nassau, Bahamas, big up Baton Rouge. Boy, I'm from Baton Rouge.
Right between West and Augusta, where them two roads meet, they call it Wilkinson Street. Manners and respect was like a sign blank check. It seems the ones that come in after quick to disrespect. You see, this life in the ghetto never easy. So many hungry days break, tell it breathe me. Way I do in the best I can, trying to turn my dollar to $100,000. I represent the ghetto people. I from
good night, Bahamas, and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Valentino Brown, a.k.a. Scoochie Scrooge, or Scroogie, or Governor, host of the talk show, Inside NC.mes, every Friday at 6:30 to 8 p.m. Our telephone numbers tonight are 323-6232-325-4316, and 325-4259. You can text us, powered by BTC, at 422-GR96. And it's always a pleasure to be a host, and to all of the many listeners who tune in and listen to this show, but also to Guardian Radio. I want to thank you very much for all of the warm thanks as I'm traveling. Many people call me. You know, they gave me a word of advice and tell me stay in the middle. And if they know me, I was always in the middle. And I will continue to be in the middle until the day I die. And I just want to say, today's show, we are going to talk about, you know, we talk about the taxpayers to fund a $1 billion civil service here in the country. You know, that's a lot of money that we're going to have to give out to a lot of people who, in many cases, deserve it. And I don't know, you know, it's big, but we are going to have to pay it, the taxpayers, and me and you. We are going to pay this $1 billion because that's the money that you spend at the gas station, that's the money you spend at the food store, that's the money you spend at the wholesale store. That's the money you spend at the Chinese. That's the money you spend when you get your car license. When you go pay for your P.O. box at the post office. Anything that relates to you paying tax, your electricity bill, all of that right there is the revenue that government collects and bills. Okay? And it goes to the civil servants, people who are doctors, who are former parliamentarian, who are former police officers, pensioners, all this stuff, who are former ministers, who are, you know, anyone in government, immigration officer, anyone who has done their time, you know, this is what collected in the budget. And this is given back to them, ready at PLPOF and them. So it's a lot, and it's me and you have to pay it. So with that in mind, you know, taxes are going to remain here. What about the quality service that we get from our government agencies in the country? And what is going on with our government agency today? And also, do you believe this corruption that has been going on when it comes to national insurance card, passport, and et cetera, documents that we see all over the news in the last few years here in the country? How has it affected raw-born Bahamians here in the country? I just want to talk about that a little bit. And then from there, I want to show you some of the double standards in our country when it comes to justice, even from our, it's like a system we pick up, like the Roman system we have picked up in this country. We are no different than any other country in the world that sometimes have created a cult-like mentality in our government agencies, whether it's defense or the police, and we call it the Brotherhood. And in there, they attack one another. And it was good for so long, but I think it has gotten to a point now where we have to realize that we have a problem and we have to correct it because no one is above the law. And when we play, the law is here to uphold and protect and serve. But that was like a sheep in the wolf's clothing, come to find out to many behemoths lately, based on what we're hearing, who is being arrested, and et cetera. So we come to our own agreement that something is wrong with the system. So what we have here, we have the sheep and wool clothing happening in our country, and we were selling the public one thing, and many of the general public, you know, they fell for it. But over the course of all of the complaints and accusations that have been coming to light, many people started to question that what they have seen and what they've been hearing ain't so true. And now they are doubting the system, and they have a reason to doubt the system. So I want to talk about that as well, because, you know, we have an officer, you know, alleged that, you know, he hit and run 9 years ago, and the family, you know, wanted justice. Come to find out, it's alleged that the officer had no insurance, no driver's license, and was exceeding the speed limit. And if that is true, this is the double standard we're talking about in our country, where they use the system but to protect themselves. You know, if he is not licensed, he's not insured, then his car should not be on the road. Automatically, he's done it in the wrong, because if you're driving with insurance and driving without the car, a license, you're done in the wrong. Don't care how you put it. So here we come 9 years later. He's being charged, but he's not being charged with a serious offense, because at that particular time, they saying that law was not out. So they charged him with that offense around that time. So, you know, I probably think they're going to try to charge him with vehicle manslaughter. I don't think that was around a few years ago. So they just added that to the penalty so he would face a lesser charge. But I mean, you know, the father was speaking out of the deceased, Mr. Philip Clare Sr., and he was saying that, you know, it was a double standard, and the police were trying to say what's right and what they're supposed to do when it comes to investigating and charging. They denied that and tried to defend that officer like he is innocent by not pursuing the investigation in order to bring relief to the family, knowing that the car was not licensed and not insured, and he was exceeding the speed limit, should be enough for him to be brought up on charges and probably bring some satisfaction to the family. Now here comes 9 years later, the father says this, you know, in his interview. I can't play it because it's Eyewitness News, and you know, you're not allowed to play at a radio station on the station, you know. But that's a double standard, you know, that we're facing in the country. And then we want to talk about Mr. Clint Watson, Senator Clint Watson, talking about the new drug agency that just formed with the police, defense force, and et cetera, and detection and et cetera. This is a little too late, you know, but it's a step in the right direction, Senator, you know, especially with all of this stuff relating to our agencies in the country, our defense force, our Alabama's defense force, and politician number one. You know, how many people have been hurt because of the dangerous drugs that are being circulating through our streets. The firearms are being circulating through our streets. It has a devastating effect on us because drugs is the number one priority that the government should be preventing it from ever hitting the streets, especially cocaine, pills, and et cetera, because we know it destroys family. If you go back in the early 70s and 80s, we had Alcohol Anonymous, you know, where we had many of our parents, you know, great-grandparents, you know, they were just drinking Bacardi and vodka, and they were just drunkards. They was the most talented set of people, but the rum got the better of them, and many of them just became drunkards and forgot about family values. It caused excessive fighting at home with the wife or the girlfriend. Child abuse became relevant because the mother or father were drinking. They were not themselves. They had the alcohol demon, and they acted out of character. Then came the cocaine, which we knew that if we look back in history, we'd see the connection between the drug cocaine era here in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, which came after the Alcohol Anonymous. And that took an even serious effect on the country and still has an effect on the country today, because we see today our country still is dealing drugs on a large scale based on the operation by the Drug Enforcement Agency of the United States of America. You know, they have been working, and the Coast Guard have been working in partnership with the Bahamas government for many years, but lately in the last few years, in the last 4 or 5 years, they have been being dedicated to working with the Bahamas. We look at the news, we have seen major airports in the country have been busted with tons of drugs, cocaine, and involves some of our law enforcement agents in the country who are supposed to be protecting and serving in the country. And it gives an indication of transporting, how a lot of firearms is getting in the country. We was wondering why so many AK-47s were getting in the country, why so much people were getting out of jail so quick, knowing that they were murderers, and we were saying, you know, these guys are getting out in 2 years. Why are they getting out in 2 years and they just kill somebody and they come out and they get bail again the next 6 months? You know, you were wondering why, and then maybe look at Johnson, the Criminal Investigation Department. And then we see a connection there where it is alleged that known persons who are now deceased, who is known to be alleged gangsters and drug dealers, were in contact and had private numbers of senior officers alleged and have a conversation about them being let off of crimes they commit if they pay $100,000. And then if you look at that, how many other persons have get out of free jail and they could have been guilty, right? And they'll hide them and they wouldn't no more be in a society, because now if the investigating officers did their due diligence job, the same suspects who, which is, because we don't know how many, how long, it had to be going on for a very, very long time, because, you know, it passed on from generation to generation. So we just don't know how many people have been affected and get out of jail. They could have been murderers, armed robbers, drug dealers. It could have been pastors. We don't know who wanted to get out and had some connection there. And even though they're guilty, they were allowed to get out of jail because of money. That's crazy. You know, how many lives are being taken because of that? We can't even give the numbers. So they say, what you do in the dark will come to light, and that's what happened in our country today. And okay, so race is gonna start now. Okay. Let me see where it's going now. Okay, start off with the Philip Clare. So yeah, Mr. Clare and the young officer. So it's like our officers them attack other officers. And like I said, if this the case, this officer was driving his car without insurance, without license, whether he's a police officer or not, he's to be held accountable by getting charged, just like any other regular citizen out there. In that case, if this is true, he was protected. Who he was protected from? He was protected from other officers because they had to investigate. Traffic officer had to come there, had to come and investigate, okay? And it takes you about 24 hours, I guess, to bring your documents to the police station. So from then to now, you know, it shows you that there was some type of cover-up. But ask yourself this. If this is just a traffic offense, right, where it is being covered up by a particular set of officers, just a traffic offense, what of other incidents like Johnson, like I'm saying, on this traffic offense, and then with everything else, you just can imagine what has been going on in this country. We might be pointing the fingers in the wrong set of direction. Maybe we didn't need all those police cars. Maybe we didn't need all those police guns and all the training new recruits. Probably we'd have focused on where the real criminals was. We wouldn't have been in the position we're in today. But we threw a double standard. And instead of doing proper investigation within their departments to find out who are these corrupt cops and go after these corrupt cops, it takes the U.S. from outside to come in and make bus and then put pressure on the Bahamas government to fulfill their deed, fulfill their concert, what they swore to protect and serve and work closely with the U.S. in apprehending illegal drugs coming in our country. So it's crazy, you know, very, very crazy. And like I say, this is just a traffic offense, you know, and I'm glad that Philip Clare Sr., you know, he says about paraphernal treatment means that favorism and protection, and that's been going on in our armed forces, and we need to address that if we want to make changes in the country. We have to address it across the board. Because now every day you're seeing something like this. You know, and that's what we call, you have a cult. You're talking about gangs, they're different gangs. We have that type of gang, but you call it a cult where they protect one another. You know, and there are many decent cops out there, but this is what happens. You have police officers who drive around, you know, car like unlicensed and insured, and once they are pulled over, you know, they show their badge and they out of there, you know. In some cases, a lot of citizens themselves, you know, themselves get pulled over, and they have no driver's license, no insurance, and they beg the police officer to give them a break. And in this case, the police, you know, can be doing something good, can be doing something bad, understanding the situation, understanding that, you know, that's the only ride I have, you know, I'm trying to get to work, you know, I'm trying to get some money to get the insurance new. Officer can't give me a break. And, you know, and sometimes, in some cases like this, this way humanity kicks in. It could be a wrong decision officer make, or a good decision. Babes are blind, say, look, you hurry, try and make it home. Don't let me catch you on the road no more. Okay? And that's a good cop just being considerate. And then you have some incidents where officers go, gosh, but you got to do something for me. You know, you get all these tickets. You're driving a driver's license and stuff. You better come up on $1,500 or $1,000. Because when I write this up here, this could be $3,000 in this car getting towed. You know, on it. And every night, the car staying in the impound, you know, that's additional $50. So if you ain't get the money the next day, as long as that record driver has that, and he keep that wherever you get it, wherever you get that park, that's additional. So you pay, it's $120 or $140 or $150 to move the car because you ain't get no driver's license and blah, blah, blah. So the police call the record. Yeah, I put it in the compound or wherever they get. They just put their cars on every day. So I need the officers to give you a break. So there's so many scenarios we have to fix in this country. Anyway, we're gonna play the clip and then we're gonna go from there.
For far too long, coordination has depended upon personalities rather than institutions. Today, we are changing that. The elevation of the National Anti-Drug Secretariat into the National Drug Policy and Planning Agency represents a new era in public policy. Yes. This is not simply an administrative adjustment. This is a declaration that the fight against drugs is a national issue requiring a whole of government and a whole of society response, because drug abuse does not only destroy individuals. Say it again. Drug abuse does not only destroy individuals. It damages families. It weakens communities. It steals futures. Yes. But Madam President, we believe in second chances. But we must also believe in prevention, treatment, rehabilitation, and recovery. Enforcement matters, but enforcement alone cannot solve the problem. That is why this administration is building an agency capable of bringing together health professionals, educators, social workers, law enforcement, civil society, and international partners. We are creating the structures necessary to gather data, identify trends, and respond to emerging threats. We are moving toward evidence-based policymaking. We are establishing the National Drug Observatory. We are creating a National Drug Information Network. We are implementing an early warning system to identify dangerous substances before they devastate our communities.
Well, that's Senator Clinton Watson, you know, talking about the different national drug agencies, early warning system. They're going to have the police. They're going to have international partners. And like I say, this is all sad and good. My point is, Mr. Watson, Mr. Senator Watson, who is this designed for? Is this designed for the people on the streets? Or if this is designed where we have the major players in this game, okay, who were high officials? And this is good. Fine detection. Are you guys going to investigate departments now to make sure that you have some information on these officers who work with immunity in their department where they can be touched until the U.S. has some type of undercover stakeout going on in our country for the last 4 or 5 years, and that you, that the commissioner believes that the Minister of National Security and the Honorable Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas have no knowledge of that you're doing an investigation here on drug barters, especially importation in the U.S. And our Bahamas government, you know, with all the intelligence that they receive from some of the most highly trained officers in this part of the Western Hemisphere, which is the Royal Bahamas Police Force, because they do a lot of investigation. They're very good at finding information on local drug dealers in the streets. They're very good of going on getting those who are responsible for heinous crimes, which we applaud them because they do a great job of going after child molesters, rapists, people who break in cars. Now, don't get me wrong, the officers, them, the police do an extremely great job of going after persons break the law. You know, we applaud them when they bring people to justice for heinous crimes in our country, like the Marco Archer, you know, like the grandmother who got raped and sexually assaulted on Ross Corner. And they did the investigation and they caught the suspect. You know, the little girl named Malcolm Michael Road, who was found in the bushes. They did their investigation and thoroughly, and they brought the suspect and the right suspect to court, and that case is closed now. So they do their job, but when it comes to investigating internally, with their brothers in arms, brothers and sisters in their arms, they turn a blind eye in many cases in this country. And we wanna be assured that the double standard needs to stop, because we see it. Okay? It's evident. We have officials saying that, you know, there's no double standard. Well, there's double standard, okay? That case what I just talked about with Philip Clare Sr. talking about a son who was involved and died in a hit and run by an officer of the Royal Bahamas Police Force who was driving without insurance and license. So automatically, you're wrong, because you ain't supposed to be driving in the first place, okay? And then you look at the circumstances. Justice was delayed for Paul was dying, yes, because of the fraternity and the protection, you know, and that's something that has to change, you know, if we want to move forward. I don't know how we're going to be able to do it, you know, because it's a very hard decision you're going to have to make. You're going to offend a lot of officers, because I've seen it on reports of officers going to the court and asking the judge to be lenient, and they could leave the court on their own accord, and that, you know, some, you know, like they knew that they were protected, but the protection barrier now is just poisoned, because now it's international pressure, and it's pressure from the media, and it's pressure from complainants, poisons like Philip Clare Sr. and many others who filed their complaints. And now their complaints now are being looked into because of so much numerous complaints and allegations are being made against our agencies in the country. And in many cases, the allegations are true. And the evidence is there. And now we are making progress. So there is double standard. And, you know, a lot of us get blamed on the streets, you know. Could you imagine, just think about this. Mr. Watson, Mr. Clint Watson, he's addressing actually what is going on now in our country in a slick way. He is saying drugs and they're going to form these organizations, but he's more talking like citizen, you know, like this is designed for the citizen, the drug dealers and the citizens. It's like, what about the drug dealers who are on the Royal Bahamas Police Force, who had access to airports? You understand? These are things we want to hear. What stipulation and preventative measure you're going to put in place to investigate officers who have immunity where they can't be questioned? Like, officers themselves will be afraid of them, you know, because they are senior officers on the Royal Bahamas Police Force, on the Defense Force, and they have rank. And what you're going to do with them when they get rank and they are protected? And when you were turning a blind eye to knowing that they are involved in illegal activities, but would do nothing, but you would parade young people on the streets and say that, you know, we're getting rid of drugs and guns, when these same officers who are involved in these allegations are bringing in guns by the cases. So you're saying one thing, Mr. Watson, and what the government plans to do, but the government is corner-hocking this thing with this gardener guy and this politician one. So now they come up with this strategy, I don't blame them, to say that they're going to deal with this drug problem. Drug has destroyed this country, and we still have not been able to recuperate. I personally was a drug baby, okay? And it's affected thousands of other poisons living in the community, and drugs still is affecting thousands of people to this day. Because you have a lot of people stagnating drugs. The majority of people are on marijuana. Some are on pills. Some are on cocaine, which is the worst thing of all. And then you have younger kids at an early age who 12 and 13 using marijuana, and I disagree with that because their minds are not properly developed. What happened to them is that they are going to be stagnated in the country, meaning that they're not going to focus on their education, you know. And if the community has nothing to offer them, then they're going to end up eventually falling through the cracks, and then we have a repeated cycle all over again. You know, I think that you should smoke when you're around 21, when you graduated from school. I don't think no one in school should be smoking, okay, unless it's prescribed for miracle marijuana for poisons, kids who have ailments that they need it, anxiety disorder, and et cetera, et cetera, and it's administered to them, you know, they get et cetera. But I don't think no kid who going to school should be using marijuana. But we have thousands of kids today who go to school and use marijuana, and they get stagnated if we don't have proper trades, and then if we don't have the proper infrastructure for them to actually, you know, be able to be a business owner, you understand, where they could keep their minds going, you know, they have to be keep on productive, always brainstorming, always keeping their hands active, you know, always thinking about doing something positive. But if they get caught in this community that has nothing to offer them, then we will lose not just one generation, we will lose many generations. And if we look at a lot of kids who walk around the streets today, boys and girls, you know, they're frequently be on the park And then the rest would just be walking up and down the streets like they're lost, you know, and they're looking to be happy. And they're looking for something, but we don't have nothing to really offer them. So that's why we have to understand that drugs, and then people go from marijuana to drinking and then crack cocaine, and then your life is all completely over. Then you come hazard not only to your family, but to your community and to your country. You become a petty thief, stealing people gas tank, people hubs off their car, you know, and little petty stuff, you know, causing more harm than good, because you're robbing and stealing from people who are struggling themselves, but they're doing it the right way, and you prey on them, and then eventually, you know, you'd get catch from these people's family, and you'd see on the news or on the TV, and you see some people beating somebody. You wonder why someone getting beat, because you just steal a woman's gas tank, you know, she's trying to cook some food, she get two sons there, and deprive them because you want a $5 pocket. You're gonna steal this woman's gas tank. But cost must see $300, $400, $500, or a little small one, you know, probably 151. But any either way, you're gonna steal this woman gas tank for you to go buy a $5 package of cocaine. And that's what be going on in our country. And this is a result from the very top. You see, so Mr. Watson, you know, I highly respect you and what you have done for yourself. And I understand what the government is trying to counteract what's going on in the country. It's been going on in both administration, because if you look at Mr. Gardner and anyone before him, it seems to me that they had close connection with political party. And in doing so, people were afraid to turn the blind eye, because I don't think they were afraid to turn the blind eye. They just probably said it's the bombers and, you know, everyone would be bad, everyone would be connected to somebody who's bad. And I guess that, you know, the guy, you know, and they just, you know, I don't, just working together. I know, what do you tell you? You know, but it's the effects of the drugs, because it passes around from coming off the plane, getting smuggled in the country, right? Then it got to go through a process of where it's getting transported. At the same time, someone's gonna get left in the Bahamas. Who all is involved is gonna get their cut, right? Some in poison who are part of the clique are not gonna be then poisoned. So their cut is get take out, and then these guys are gonna take their cut and go in their community. They have family, and they family have some guys who are little rough boys down there in Hay Street or Mason Addition. You know, they're going to distribute a few pounds there, about a key, two key here, or a key there. And you put a key there in Bantan, you put a key there in Fox Hill, you put a key there, like that. You know, and then these guys, them, they want fire. You know, you get firearms coming, because you get clearance now, because like I say, you got to look at it like this. The government needs to understand what has actually happened behind closed doors. I could give you what happened when it reached the airport. You got the senior officer who in charge of the airport. He making sure everything's straight, so there's no inspection, there's no one to check this load, because he in charge of this airport. And he makes sure everything's straight. So the customs officers ain't turning a blind eye. The immigration officers turning a blind eye, because this is the police and they're in charge. The porters can't do nothing. The rest of the officers can't do nothing. And if you listen to one of the incident where we have an officer who was on patrol, and then you had some other officers who just get charged recently. We had three officers who just get recently charged for a lot of drugs, right? I think so. What else can I say now? And they get charged. Oh man, they forget. Yeah. And they got charged for intense supply or something that involved with drugs. And these are officers involved with drugs. They're being let off the force. Okay, listen to this. There was a a good police officer. See, we got to understand what we're talking about, who is good and who is bad, and who is actually an officer and who is not an officer, right? Using their badge to do wrong, using their badge to smuggle illegal activity in the country, using their badge to go poison the nation, and at the same time, locking up guys in the community who they don't like or who don't want to work with them. You understand? And put them before the courts and their friends and all these stuff, what was going on in our country. Because there was a recording going on with a Pacific officer, I think it's Mr. Alcott. I know him. I watch him. Used to hang around the corner with the same three guys who got killed on Cowpen Road, Mr. Spider and all those guys. I grew those guys up, all right? So I know exactly what I just don't say too much, okay? But get killed by the graveyard. I used to watch them with Mr. Alcott. And I ain't saying he did nothing, okay? But I'm still, I used to watch him and those guys hang together, drink together, Hennessy, right there by the park, okay? All right? And come to find out, you need to listen. He is responsible for killing the guys, you know? And a case that he won about 4 or 5 months ago. And then after that, he got charged for this incident involving drugs. He got acquitted on that end for the murders of Spider and et cetera, three guys who got killed. And then he was later charged and got dismissed, I think, from the Royal Bahamas Police Force. But on a worse note, the same individual was on the airport. I don't know if it was in the family island, or the shipment of stuff was reaching, drugs were reaching, and they was looking to get it. But there was a certain officer, inspector, sergeant, on duty, and you could hear in the voice note where these officers was willing to take the life of that inspector or that sergeant because they said that he is a good guy. You understand? So, Mr. Watson, how are you going to address these type of incidents where you get good officers who protecting the country, doing what they swore their constitution, swore to the constitution to do to protect the Bahamas from drugs, from criminality, and yet still we have officers who was willing to take the life of a good officer. Okay? It reminds me of time back, my good friend Zach, he got killed on duty from a crooked cop, okay, by a little general. And Zach got killed on violent times. And Zach is probably one of the best officers you could have ever met. You know, he treated us like real young guys growing up, even though he was a police officer and we were gangsters on the streets. He would always talk to us. And he would, if you were wanted, he would come looking for us and not aggressive. He would come through the shortcut, standing up, you know, where you see school, you see. You know, and he would look for us, and he said, tell him, no, I just look him, there's a warrant out for their arrest. Tell him I want to talk to them and come get them in the station because I don't want them. You know how we go. I don't want the CID officers come looking for them because they could turn into a life and death situation because the CID back in the day was very, very, very strict. Once you was wanted, you know, it was on our part too because most time, you know, we had a knife or we had a gun on us. So if you want it, your luck could be bad and you get this gun on you and you want it. And the police pull up and you make a move, you know, we were a cheat finger too, because, you know, we're kind of rough too. So we would return fire or make the hesitation to try and yucko retrieve our firearm, and the officer has no choice but to fire, you know. And that's how it was. And he would come around and he would talk to us and take us to the station if we were wanted and let him know I brought him in. Y'all don't bruise them up, you know, and he would come back few hours later and check up on you and bring you some McDonald's or Kentucky, you know. And he told us that Sunday before he got killed, he told us this. He said, boy, Shuji and Dog is deceased now, Douglas Johnson. And he would say this. He said this to me before he passed away. You know, the same Sunday we played basketball. Let me just tell you all the story quick. And that's why I say all officers ain't bad. Officers like Zach Jeffrey Tucker, one of the greatest officers I ever put on a uniform. And he died in the line of duty. So this is for all the good officers with intentions like his, not an officer who, those officers threatened to take his life on the airport road because he was doing his job. He is just like Zach and many others on the Royal Bahamas Police Force, like my uncle Barry Brennan. You know, so let me tell you a story about Zach. So we play ball on Sunday, and Zach would normally be working on Sunday. So some Sundays he would be on patrol, and this is not buying his character. He loved to play with us. He lived in Mason Addition, but he loved to play with us on H Street because we were physical, and then we used to run some of the best basketball games in the country at that time, and our park was stay full. So Zach would be on patrol. He's a senior officer. Three officers would be in the car. So what he would do? He would go and see us in the park playing, pass by the park, he's breaking to a station, and he would tell the officer, y'all go take a little break. Take a little hour break or 2 hour break, right? Because that might have been his lunch break. He would have his pants and everything set up nice and neat. He was one of the cleanest officers. You know what I mean? Chris, this is the truth. I'm telling you, and anyone can tell you this. That's what he used to do. So he would go and he would take his uniform and he would hang it up in the patrol car, nice and neat. And then he would have his attire, his basketball pants and basketball shirt, and we'd go at it, right? Because you know when he come, he ain't going to the sideline. We have to give him a pick quick. So as soon as he reach, whoever that got to come off the court, he got to play. You see what I'm saying? Because we respect him so much. So anyway, we was on the park that Valentine's, and he was telling the story about how dangerous it is to be a police officer and what is going on around 2-3 in the morning. And if the police were able to tell the general public exactly what has happened around that time, say we'd be surprised. And some of the things he telling me were police cars were used to begin shoot up late in the night, and they were bucking guys with their drug shipment, and they were helping shoot out on the airport road and stuff like that. You know, and he said, just you and he's just telling us his story. He said, just you and guys who bring it in their boat, and they get all kind of big guns, and they licking corn. And he telling these things. He said, the police car get shoot up, and we had to run back this way. And he's telling us his story, you know. So anyway, he said, sometimes you ain't guaranteed to come home. And honest to God, Zach ain't make it home that Sunday, Valentine's. Zach ended up going to Little General's. He was working in the South Beach Police Station. And the report is he was riding a patrol car along with the next officer. And as he's patrolling Little General, alarm went off at Little General's. And there's a dispute saying that there was a break-in. So in response to the break-in, the officers didn't respond. On their journey, as they were going to respond to the break-in and the alarm, they saw a suspicious person standing on the side of the road with a bag in his hand. When they approached this individual identified himself as a member of the Royal Bahamas Police Force. So by him saying that, right, Zach dropped his guard, him and the next officer. I think the officer also. I see the officer the other day. I think he's an ASC now, or as assistant commissioner of the same officer who got shot. I saw him the other day because I could always remember him dropping Zach off as well, many times, because this is Zach's partner. So anyway, let me finish telling the story. I started to question the officer and say, well, okay, what you getting in the bag? He said, no, man, he doing some undercover work. This was reported. So he telling Zach and the officer, he's doing some undercover work. And this is his gear, right? That time, this was the officer who was breaking in the generals. Or done breaking the generals, because I heard that he was the security of the generals. So I guess he saw the money making the general, his government salary was not enough. So he decided, to be, instead of being security and being a police officer, he won't be a person who breaking it in. And they say, a thief, what do they say with a thief? What they tell you with a thief? Let me see what they say with a thief now. They say, a thief is a murderer. Because when you're going to thief, anything could go wrong. And the thief don't want to get catch. All right? So he do anything to get away. Because he don't get catch, because he know he'd get beat. He could get embarrassed. So a thief would do anything to get away. So if they're going to break in a place, and if they have a chance to kill the owner or kill the people burglary, breaking in a poison house. That's why when people break in people's house, they normally kill them and rape them because that's their intention, but then the person might see their face and they can know the person. You can know the perpetrator, so what they're going to do, they say, you see my face, so they got to kill. That could be someone you know in the community. So that's what I tell you the scenes of anyway. And I'm saying, man, listen, I got to carry you to the station to verify that you went out in the cover. So I heard that he started to beg him, man, don't carry me to the station, man. You know, you these fellow officers, you got to give me a break here. You know, because this is what the younger officer was saying, you know, who was with Zach. So anyway, Zach said, man, I got to carry in the station. Now, again, Zach made a crucial mistake, I heard, if I'm correct. They said that Zach put him in the box seat without searching him, without putting handcuffs on him. So the same way how we had all these incidents of officers running these airport, right? And not, like, have supervisor over them to see what they're doing down there in the airport to make sure that at least we get some supervision here to make sure this officer ain't rogue and doing some type of legal activity here, okay? You know what I mean? You're supposed to have a supervisor in charge of officers to make sure that they still stick up to command, you know? And you end up dropping your guard because they're your fellow officers, okay? So you're turning a blind eye. Zach made a crucial mistake because, like, again, he's supposed to handcuff him, right? Because he feel that something ain't right. But he's an officer. So as an officer, he know they have to protect one another. So he failed to handcuff him. You understand? Just a mistake now what he's making again in society. You see, because he is an officer, you drop, and Zach is a good officer, but you got to understand what I'm trying to explain to you. I'm trying to tell you about the double standard and the maternity where they have, where, like, driving that car without license, insurance, you know, and you notice officer killed somebody. You notice officer was driving without license and insurance, but yet still, the road traffic officer investigating the incident, turning a blind eye. That's double standard. And 9 years later, same thing with that. In a different manner, but similar, but in a small manner that cost his life. You understand? He's supposed to search him, handcuff him. You understand? He just tell him go in the box seat. You know, we could ride to the station. You know? And yes, the story now. I could always remember this because I was watching news. Now, I asked they proceed to go to the station. They say the officer who got shot, Zach got killed, and the officer who got shot on the side of Zach, he got shot as well. But before they got shot, yes, the story. He says, Zach, put him in the car. And he started to ride to go back to the Seoul Beach Police Station to verify what this officer is saying is true, right? So then they saw a guy going to work. That's when Alanis was building the second phase over Paradise Island, but this guy was just going to work. He just an innocent bystander who just going to work around this particular time. He just in the wrong place at the wrong time. So he get on his uniform, he get on his vest and his helmet. So now the Zach, how is this alarm going off now? He's still saying now this could be the perpetrator here instead of this police officer here. So he look at the guy who walking on the road and say, probably this officer in the back telling the truth. And that this guy here who walking going to work, who only going to work, trying to catch the bus to go to work. So Zach must see, this must be the guy here breaking into place. So Zach them and pulling them over and crashing him. And he telling Zach, am I going to work? So Zach said, man, look here, I got to catch you to the station. You say, because you know the alarm ringing and then you come around this way. But the guy was actually going to work because that's the one who run the car as well. So now he get locked up because he tell the story as well. You see, the one who got shot, the same one, the police officer, and this guy who going to work, he is the one who tell the story. So him and the officer who got shot, their story was the same. So he asked the story now. As they were turning around, they said they was turning around to go back to the police station. They said that the officer started to beg Zach, man, no man, no man. And then he said all of a sudden, him and the officer, who handcuffed was on the side of him. Two police officers was in the front seat. And he said that all he sees is when the guy, like, ran in his pants, the officer, who was off duty, who's saying that, you know, he's undercover, said he ran in his pants and a Yakuza, small caliber gun. And shot Zach in the back of his head. The driver, because Zach was driving. And listen how God keeps Zach alive for a few seconds to save the life of both his colleague and that guy, the innocent guy who got locked up. Because what you think is going to happen to them next? He shoots Zach in his head. I heard this, just a story. And Zach stumble and hit the dashboard of the patrol car. And the car started to speed out of control. At the same time, he shoot the next officer. The same police officer shoot the next officer. He didn't shoot one and think Zach dead. And then he shoot the next officer. And the car was like spiraling out of control. So the officer jumped with the car. The one who gets shoot, he was able to jump with the car moving. Nah, who left in the car? Yeah? Guess who left in the car? Hold on. Before the officer jumped out, I heard that Zach regained consciousness. And the same time he shoot the officer to the passenger side, Zach was able to regain consciousness. Now remember, I tell you, Zach got shot in the back of his head from close range. So he's supposed to be in dead. And they say he regained consciousness. And he was able to end up killing the officer who shoot him. Because he was getting ready to kill the passenger on the side of him, because he ain't leaving no witness. He got to kill everyone. You understand? Not Vietnam. Y'all go look up the story. Zach Jeffrey Tucker. What did I say the place name? Lil Generous. Okay, y'all go look it up. And he just left from the park that Sunday. Valentine's Day. It was a Valentine's Day. Y'all go look it up. And he tell us that. Just like I say, hey, Chris, just like I say, you never know when you're coming home when this police drop. And that's exactly what happened. Look who he got killed from. And you know what disturbed me most about this whole incident? We ain't heard nothing about Zach. Man, yeah, it was like a hush-hush thing, you know? And to me, Zach was never honored. You understand? And it bothered us who were friends of Zach, you know? And I tell you, he's one of the greatest set of guys you could ever met, you know? So we have problems, right? So, Mr. Watson, Glenn Watson, I think that what you and the government has come up with, the National Drug Agency, the early detection, you know, and all that is all good. But you guys missing the ball here. You guys only looking at the guys on the streets. You ain't looking at officers who running shipments. So all this y'all doing right now is a waste of time. If y'all ain't ready to investigate and persecute individuals who are destroying the country. Y'all ain't making no sense. No sense at all. You know, and y'all, the thing is, y'all put all the blame and all the guys on the streets. You know, I said to myself, I said, boy, more gangs, because officers were working hand in hand and putting drugs and firearms in the hands of hardened criminals. And they were partners. And when you wasn't working with them, they were taking you out. And if they didn't like you, they locking you up. And then they parading you. And these some of the same officers you see on the news handcuffing. And, like, you know, they doing their job fast. We concerned. We happy that they doing it. When you come to find all these guys, I'm running loads. But they locking up people, children on the streets. You know? And every day you read the newspaper, it is something new. You know, and this 1 billion civil servants. So what is the service are we requiring? And I'm going to end on this. What time is it now? It's 1:23. So this one thing, this 1 billion civil servant, what are we paying it for? Why are we, as Bahamians, ain't getting the best service? We've been lied to, taken advantage of, you know? All the police cars they get and stuff like that. At the time, all these high-powered rifle and all these drugs. Because it's evident, people. Look at it right now. Look at our murder going. Look at the drug distribution going on in the country. Why is a major sharp drop all of a sudden? Because all the major entry points are being closed. All of the routes are being detected by the U.S. government because of the information they receive from a lot of the persons now convicted in the U.S. and serving time in the Bahamas. Defense Force officer who gave her the coordinates and routes to the drug dealers who importing the drugs in the country. All those routes now are being detected by the U.S. now. Nothing could get you. Only what they allowed to get you. And they allowed it to get you because they wanted the connections. And now that they get the connection. And here's the thing, when we're talking about this number one politician, I believe the U.S. will release who the number one politician is when they start to get more details on Gardner. And I think that once that is established, we're going to see an indictment being issued for politician one. Okay, because the U.S. do not give out the information because they want to catch you off guard. So that particular individual, they can't travel to the States. They're keeping it hush-hush so that it keep you off guard. That individual might know who they are, you know, but they don't know when the U.S. is going to come for them. Because once it is done being identified, they just is not letting the information out because they are going to come for that individual someday, somehow. Okay? So, yes, it's crazy. So, are we getting service? So, now, let me say this now. Let me just talk about this quick. I think, I don't know what's going on. I talked about Bank of the Bahamas a month ago when you couldn't get no service for four days. You couldn't even get no money out. This was the same time with Gardner. And, you know, I mentioned that, you know, they're probably trying to freeze up Gardner money, you know, because they know the connection. The U.S. don't play. Now the U.S. is saying now that anything that Gardner dealt with, you know, because when you know you deal drugs in the U.S. and they get you, he's looking at a 15-year sentence or more. And, you know, the U.S. confiscate poison charged with narcotics. You know, they take away everything, you know. You know, like how we take away 90 SDs and et cetera, where the U.S. takes away everything. Anything that you own, your house, your business, anything that you own, they feel that involve smuggling drugs in the country, it's gone. Any connection to that, they taking it. They seizing it. You know, they don't play. So Mr. Gardner has some serious decision to make right now. You know, he's a beaming boy. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes. And I don't want to be poisoned when who connected them too, because, you know, anytime the helicopter could come for you. You know, so anyway, let me just end the show on this note. You know, I went by the passport office, okay, today. I was there about a month ago to get my passport. Was done. So it was going to be up the 1st of June. And that's why I talk about the quality of service. And this has nothing to do with the individuals at this department. I think that, you know, they need to come up with a set of rules and say that you're coming into the passport, get renewal or damage, you know, bring two pictures, bring your mother's birth certificate or your great-great-grandmother's birth certificate because, you know, it's crazy up there. So let me just explain, you know, anyway. So I went to the passport office. And again, to the staff, I understand that all these new procedures come into play because of all the fraudulent documents being found with passport and national insurance. So now there's a crackdown on how you go about getting your national insurance card. You have to go through steps. You have to have signatures from 1, 2, 3 individuals. You know, that's how it go now. So it's very hard for Bahamians, raw-born Bahamians, to get a passport renewal in the country. Okay? Very, very hard. You need your great-great-granddaddy, your great-great-great-grandmother. You need your mother. If your mother passed away, you need your mother birth certificate. They don't want no death certificate. Man, it's crazy. I don't know what's going on. It should be a foreigner in this country because the way how we get treated now as Bahamians when we go to these government agencies, you know, like, you need a whole background check now. And this is not our fault, you know. This is the fault of persons involved in politics and government who sold our birthright, sold our passport, fraudulent our passport, our national insurance, you know, birth certificate, death certificate. It's so mixed up right now. Huh? They try to see if you must be being here from 1800 or 1700 right now in order for you to get your stuff. And I think that's too much for us. Too much for us as raw-born Bahamian, you know? Why all this? It's not our fault. Now you want to make sure we're Bahamian? Man, that's crazy. But let me finish telling the story. So anyway, now, I was there last month, so I had to go on through hell by the registrar office, you know? Spent a lot of money there. Had to go on to the JP, spend about $100 to the JP. I get a break. It's supposed to be like $150. I get a break with $100. I had to go pay for my birth certificate, my mother birth certificate, two stamps, $15 each for the stamp. So that's $30 I had to pay for the stamp. I had to go take passport pictures, all this stuff, right? Everything costs money anytime you go to these government departments. So it ain't like they're doing us no favor, because when we go to these departments, we still gotta spend money, because you gotta spend money on your two stamps, right? So that you can put on your form to the pass the registrar office. Then you got to put it for your birth certificate. So you're spending money for the services of the registrar office. Same thing with the passport offices. So we paying this $1.2 billion to civil service, right? And we still ain't getting the best quality of service, because you get to run around. We need to just have a list of stuff that what you need to do when you go by the registrar office. It seems that they're just trying to put together all of our documents, okay? It seems that there was some problem in the registrar office, some problem in the passport office, some problems by the national insurance office, all of a sudden. Now you have to go and do the 9-yard. You know, up and down, up and down. And a lot of Bahamians are frustrated, man. They be in by the passport office. Let me just finish, man. So anyway, I put in for last month. They tell me come back 3 working weeks. So now I get straight on everything. I think I'm with Valentino Brennan. I don't understand why it's still Valentino Brennan. I've been Valentino Brown. I never had a Brennan passport in my life. All my passport is Valentino Brown. We went and did all that. We did it 2015. Before that, my grandmother, when she was living, she went and got my name transferred to Valentino Brown, because my mother's a Brennan. My father's a Brown. My grandmother's a Brown. But she got my father's surname. So my name was Valentino Brennan. Never had no Brennan. So every time I go, my birth certificate always come up Valentino Brennan. It's supposed to be in the system. Like on the street. So this is the third time I had to go and do all this stuff all over again. So hopefully that's the last time. You know? I just had to go on back again today. So anyway, I went there. So they say 3 working weeks. So I think 2 working weeks. So I said, let me get them 3. Because I want to get my passport. No, I think I can get my passport when I go back now, because I get the receipt. So I didn't put in for the passport. The lady didn't do everything now. Now, the second step is to go to the second part of the passport office. So when I went in, then I think I get my passport. So the lady tell me, say, you know, you need to do this and you need to do that. So anyway, I make but 3 different runs because I keep on getting it wrong, because I really didn't understand her, because I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. You know, because I thought I didn't, JP didn't stamp or co-sign thing up, but he did not, you know, because when I went the first time to get it, they tell me, say, I didn't need it. So now when I go to the second phase, that's the second phase. The second phase, they allow, you know, you have to go and get the thing stamped with your picture to the back. And the JP got a sign on it and say, what year, blah, 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 this. So why when I get to do? Now when I get all I do, they tell me, say, it takes me now 3 weeks to get my passport from the day. So I thought I was going to get my passport today. Now I have to go to the next department. They say that my passport I will get my passport now, right? But it takes 3 weeks. So now I have to wait 3 weeks to get my passport. What kind of crap that is? All this because the agencies around the country and some JPs and that were crooked
They sell it our boat right now. We got to suffer. Who all been getting our citizenship? Who all been getting our passport? Put pressure on us. So now Bahamians who are full-born here in the country have to go through hell for their documents. Someone advising you to go and check on your documents. Make sure you get your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother from 1900 or your mother and try go get your documents sorted because they put you through hell. Okay? It's not good service. And we are being treated like second-class citizens in our own country because of the slackness and the corruption in our government departments. Now we're paying the piper. I know a lot of y'all would agree with me. Right now, you're going to hell going by the passport office right now to get your passport settled. You need so much different things right now, but Chris, they have you up and down. What I saying, like, how we're besieging what all you need as a Bahamian to get your stuff. That's all. Because every time you go, this one saying this, you go, this part, this one saying this. When you go to this one, tell you, I send you to here for no application. That's what they've been here all day. This one saying they send you for application. Then this one saying you need to put your pictures. This one you've been hearing all day. And all you hear is people saying, what's going on? Why did my great-grandmother? Why did my grandmother? You know, a nice Bahamian. You know, and all this is because of the corruption selling out our documents. Now we suffering. I swear, 3 weeks now I got to get my passport. Like I say, I ain't mad with the person who's serving, you know. But they saying you got to understand from us who paying this 1 billion civil servant, you guys work for us. We paying y'all. The government ain't doing us nothing free. They ain't doing you no favors when you go to the passport office. You're gonna pay your $50, okay? So that's service. So we deserve the best service. We deserve the best information. When we go to registrar, we deserve the best information because we pay. When we go by the hospital, we deserve the best service from our civil servant if we're going to give them $1.2 billion because they're not doing no favor. We all behemoths, but y'all are civil servants. Y'all getting paid from the taxpayers, and we are the taxpayers. And there's a lot of problem with the license, with these liquor license around the country. I think we getting too strict. Liquor ain't the problem in this country, all right? Liquor ain't the problem in this country. Eh? You know what the problem is in this country? The problem is in this country is we have too many problems. But liquor is one of our problems, but it's not our biggest problem, you know. All the regulation they're asking now for people to get licensed for restaurant and bar and stuff like that is crazy, you know. You can't blame it on those kind of stuff, man. You know, I appreciate them coming down on poisons who trying to get their license to open a bar, et cetera. You know, it's a tough task. You know, I'm trying to get mine as well. You know, so I know it's going to be very, very, you know, especially where I'm situated, but I'm situated in a nice community, and I think that's what I want to do. I want to entertain the tourists that come to my community. So I'm going to sell booze. I'm going to open a restaurant and a small convenience store to deal with the volume of people in the community who want a little water, who want a little hot tea, who want a little chicken snack, who come, you know, but still don't want to be like the Chinese too. So if the Chinese could have a bar, a restaurant, and a convenience store, why as me, as a Bahamian living in the inner city community, can't have the same thing? So I'm pushing for that because I see there's a bright future in it. I'd say to the minister responsible for that, I think that's Jerome Fitzgerald. So I like to say to Mr. Jerome Fitzgerald, see how you can make it a little easier on persons who are trying to get license to sell alcohol. Because I don't tell you the truth, you know. It's how you regulate it, you know. But like I say, you know, it's how you allow it to be consumed in the community, you know, don't make sure like it ain't around no churches or nothing like that. I think that's best, but it's a little too hard, man, you know, too much stuff, you know, and then we're trying to go modern digital, you know, I think that we should slowly go to digital, but let's keep the manual as well, you know, keep it closed so in case we have a breakdown, and a good case, like what I'm like, trying to explain is like how the Bank of the Bahamas was shut down for 4 days and Bahamians couldn't even get no money in 4 days' time because they said that their system was being infiltrated by scammers. So if we're going digital, we also have to be very careful to keep the analog system as well. You know? So it's crazy, man. It's crazy. Parenteral treatment. So we have it, you know? Yep. Drugs affect us. And I hope you guys are listening, you know, because sometimes when I listen to our leaders, they really don't understand the effect on how drugs and guns destroys the country, you know. I myself, you know, I used to sell drugs like for 10, 15 years, so I tell you exactly what I know. And I could go in details and tell you all some things, you know, I'd be giving you all that hint. I wasn't just a gangster. You know, and I did a lot of business with a lot of people in a lot of high places. You think running a street gang, you don't have connections? I just went boring and exposed those people's name and stuff like that. The only people's name I exposed is what I see in the newspaper. I would never mention Mr. Gardner, even if I know Mr. Gardner. All right? I would mention Mr. Gardner because Mr. Gardner's name is in the newspaper. I only mention the name when I see it in the newspaper or in the areas. I know something with an individual, I'd say police. I never say that police officer's name unless his name is in the newspaper. I did a lot of business with a lot of people in a lot of departments when I was on the streets and running the streets. All right? And so some of the things that you see and you're talking about individuals like God and them stuff, there's no different than some of us who were in the same position on the streets. You understand? So the Guardian told me that they want the stories about what goes on inside the inner city. And me as a representative of the inner city who also contribute to the development. You know, I've done many positive programs. But at the same time, my job is to make sure bring out the invisible stuff. And these are the invisible stuff that been going on in our country. And citizens themselves are being blamed. That time, our law enforcement and our government officials are the ones responsible for the increase in drugs and firearms in the country. But I ain't saying they admit that, you know. But then we see Mr. Watson come on and talk about the National Drug Agency and the early detection. These are the things they're putting in place now to try to counteract what's been happening in government, and especially in their government, over the course of the 4 years, to give us some surety. But you're still not talking the right thing. If the anti-gang law was passed today, what you think would happen? You would see the connection to a lot of people in this country today. But don't blame, and you need to take that anti-gang bill and mash it up and throw it away, because you ain't blaming nothing on the gangsters, because like I say, in many cases, the police, defense force, and the guys who themselves shooting and sell drugs on the wall, partners with law enforcement until you are no longer wanted. And when you're no longer wanted, you got to hit the road, Jack, every man for himself. So, like I say, the anti-gang thing, you're whoever bring the tear up. And it just can't be for people on the streets. No. It just can't be for people on the streets. Mm-mm. We've been blamed for a lot of stuff, but like I say, it was a partnership. Because if you want to make money, where are you going to make money? If you have drugs and you're on these agencies, where are the customers? Where's the Chinese? Where are the liquor stores? Where are the churches? Where are they? They are in the community. All right? You know why they're in the community? Because in the community, you might say the community poor, but listen, you have a volume of people coming to you to your store, some people spending 25 cents, some people spending $50, some people spending $100, some people spending 10, some people spending 75 cents, some people spending, but you have a volume of customers coming to your stores every day, because in that particular community, you have a volume of people live there who come to you because you have something to offer. So that's why if you have drugs, you put it in the community. You need some poison in the community. If you have guns and you need to make money, you have to get it in the community, because the guys in the community will get the money some way, somehow, to get the drugs, okay? That's why everything is always set up in the community. So the guns and drugs that come in the hands of individuals who are part of law enforcement. They, in turn, allow it to come in the country. They break the boundary. See, it's them who protect the border. So if the border is compromised by its protector and they're allowing it in, that's a gateway. And that gateway, you know, causes a bigger problem, because now you need to distribute. And to distribute, you turn to a sheep in wolf clothing. And then you play protector. And then you are the one who actually is causing crime in the country. So, Mr. Watson, that's what it is. You know, I appreciate what the government is doing, but it has to be a balance, and y'all have to understand that it comes from the top to the bottom. And if you're not going to be able to investigate officers who use their position of power to bring the destruction to our streets, it's a problem for me. So that's how it is, you know? So let me read this quick. So yeah, you know, at the passport office, they need to get it right up there. So let me read this quick. And Mr. Gardner, you know, I feel it for him, you know. And the judge says he's a danger to the community. So let me read what they say. They say, convicted drug trafficker Jonathan Eric Gardner, 58, who was indicted in New York on fresh charges during conspiracy, on fresh drug conspiracy on gun charges this month, was denied bail when he appeared in a New York courtroom yesterday morning. Gardner, wearing a tan prison uniform, was led into court around 10 a.m. by U.S. Marshal. He acknowledged Bahamas Consul General to New York, Leroy F. Major. Gardner, also known as Player, took a seat at a desk behind the U.S. Attorney, Sassy Rubio Ayala, Assistant United States Attorney Julian N. Murray, and Jonathan Fanaski. The prosecutor in the case sat at desk as he waited for the arrival of Judge Gregory Woods. Gardner appeared calm, side to side, and massaging his neck. After a long interval, Woods arrived and explained that he wanted to review the case, discuss the case schedule, and deal with the question of bail. On the issue of bail, several arguments in his freedom. Twice she mentioned that he had been the victim of a plane crash, a traumatic event which he had not been given time to process prior to his arrest. She claimed he had been held from May 12 to May 15 without ever being charged. Gardner, along with 10 others, was on a plane headed from Albuquerque to Grand Bahama on May 12, Election Day. The passenger, according to defense, were engaged in election-related and camping-related. I'm going to go to page 5. This is in the Nassau Guardian. Read it is. Page 5. Okay, let me see. Okay, Rachel. On activities occurring on Election Day, there were no disagreement from either side that Gardner was found with $30,000 in cash, nor did either side contest the $20,000 of that was vehement money that had been withdrawn from Gardner's bank account, and $5,000 was in a paper bag with the name of politician one written on it. There was no mention of the other $5,000. They argued that while the DA in a criminal complaint stated that the currency was packaged in a manner consistent with narcotics proceeds, the money was campaign-related cash. Pointed out that since there are no vehement law regarding political donation, there was nothing illegal amiss about the political money. She stated that there was no drugs or guns on the plane and no contraband was found. A final argument was that while the U.S. claimed that there were 13 other persons involved in a drug conspiracy, there had been, according to Bahamian consulate, no request extraditing of anyone whatsoever. She was referring to a 2024 indictment filed in New York against 11 Bahamian, including a senior police officer, a police sergeant, and a defense force officer, y'all hearing this? And two Colombians who were charged with conspiracy to import into the United States possession and use of firearm and firearm conspiracy. Yesterday, U.S. Prosecutor Murray and Bonsky responded with a blistering of reason why Gardner should not be denied bail. First, they said that the magnitude of the charges against Mr. Gardner, including the mandatory maximum sentence of 16 years in prison, if convicted, created an insensitivity for flight. That also pointed out Gardner's history of using multiple aliases, his lack of ties to anyone in the United States, and his many ties to Bahamian and Bahamian officials. You're listening? Evidenced by its own attorney assertion that he was going to pay those officials $30,000. So Gardner said he was going to pay the officials $30,000. Plus that he has connection in Panama. The U.S. prosecutor said that while Gardner tried to distance himself, he was still linked to the Bahamian construction company Top Notch Builders. They said that Gardner said he was a male construction worker, when in fact, it was likely that he was the owner of Top Notch, which received $37 million government contract, a $20 million loan. Furthermore, they argued Gardner has additional assets, including several planes that he owns that are in other people's name. Those conclusion was that it would be easy for him to flee. Regarding the extradition question, the U.S. prosecutor argued that it was nearly impossible to extradite people from the Bahamas. They cited a successful extradition of 8 people that took 11 years of negotiation to achieve. That means they're trying to say that the Bahamas government itself protects individuals who they sent extradition orders to the Attorney General's office requesting that these individuals get extradited. U.S., but it takes them 11 years, so that means our government itself, dilly-dally, whether these individuals were alleged drug dealers or not, I mean, everyone is innocent, but the U.S. don't come after you unless they have all of the evidence, and they're stating that they, let me read it again. They said, regarding the extradition question, the U.S. prosecutor argued that it was near impossible to extradite people from the Bahamas. They cited a successful extradition of 8 people that took 11 years of negotiation to achieve. So yeah, when we're talking, this goes back, let me give you a prime example. When I talk about the brotherhood, you talk about gangs. Remember I told you, we were talking earlier about the younger officer, the officer who was driving without national insurance, car insurance, without car being licensed, right? And he might not even have a license, all right? And you see there where he was protected, where he was not charged, where he was let go, and it took 9 years. So we're seeing the same thing here. So you see what I'm talking about, how we are destroying ourselves and we're protecting people who do wrongdoing in our country, even though in the case you could be dead wrong. But the country itself, but the connection of the person to the party, whether it's PLP or FNM, they protect these individuals. You understand? And it puts the pressure on us as citizens. So I'm reading. Y'all listening? Okay. All right. So you got to read between the lines. So I'm just using the example because God gave me a discerning spirit and I can pick up through the line. Okay, we can take this one. We can take this one call. We can take this one call. Go ahead, caller.
Hey, Scrooge.
Hey.
Good evening. What's going on?
Everything good, brother.
All right. Just wanted to call in. I heard the reference to this conversation you're having with the alleged charges against Gardner, right?
Yeah.
Because nothing has been proven as yet in any court.
No.
It all stands as alleged currently.
Yes.
I found it so strange when I heard on the news. I don't remember what time it is, but I heard on the news sometime during the day that persons in the United States was making a statement in court that it is very difficult.
Yes.
Almost making it seem like the Bahamas and our government has been non-compliant.
Yes.
With working with their jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
With getting persons into the into their country that they wish to process or prosecute, right?
Yes, sir.
But the strange thing about it, I remember monitoring several instances over the decades, right? With persons who were alleged to be involved in drug matters, right? And one of the things I noted, not only from the extradition request, but also from the legal side of the equation, is that if persons are being requested to be extradited, right, and they have procedures that are ongoing in our local jurisdiction, right, then that means that before an extradition order can be granted, right, just following these matters over the decade, the individual is entitled by law to have their day to pursue their matters that they have ongoing in the Bahamas courts,
yes,
right?
Yes, I agree.
Before any extradition can be in. And in many instances that I've witnessed in modern cases.
You're breaking them a little bit. Go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I saw where many individuals, some of the biggest names in the country, and certainly regionally, were eventually extradited, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just find it, I find it so unfair, and even almost to the point of ridiculous, that persons can impugn the government of the Bahamas, right, in courts in the United States, and they're not held to any kind of accountability for these false statements that are being made, right? And then you would have, on the flip side of that, you would have Scrooge, you would have people who are desirous of being the government of the Bahamas, who would just swallow that hook, line, and sinker and try to join in with the bandwagon to castigate the Bahamas government, right?
Mm-hmm.
Stupidly, I might add, irresponsibly, I must add, and also, you would almost say, in a treasonous manner, right?
Mm.
And these people think that Bahamians would support them when they, without any kind of evidence, are allowing and agreeing with persons who are making all kinds of negative, Listen, man, it's just ridiculous, man. The politics in the country, Scrooge, the level of ignorance in the country, Scrooge, as it relates to allowing and standing by and watching others besmirch our character as a nation, it is just ridiculous. You get at me what I'm saying, Scrooge?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, man. And I'm hoping that the Bahamas government would be able to either through diplomatic channels, the proper diplomatic channels, or otherwise, as may be necessary, cause for such rhetoric to come to an end, man, because it's absolutely unfair, it's unreasonable, and it's totally ridiculous. Totally. And if you apply the same measuring stick or standard, pound for pound, Scrooge.
Okay.
To these individuals in any one of these countries, they would find themselves wanting to a great degree. You understand what I'm saying, Scrooge?
Yes, sir.
Scrooge.
Yeah.
You can hear me?
I can hear you. Listening?
They would find themselves wanting to a great degree because they cannot pass the smell test themselves. And they're seeking to castigate. You understand what I'm saying, Scrooge?
I think so.
It's ridiculous, man. Anyway, enough respect, Scrooge.
Yes, sir.
Continued blessings, man. Continue the great work.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I feel it. I feel it, you know. You got to represent, you know, as I go. But like I say, you know, it's a lot, man, you know. It's a lot going on, you know. You talk about how it's near impossible to extradite people from the Bahamas. You know, the U.S., they do their background check, you know, and what they do, they let us have our jurisdiction. We are partners. We close partners with the U.S. You know, in some cases, you know, they have the information. They have persons like the gentleman who was locked up now, serving time in the United States of America. And, you know, they have their evidence, you know. The U.S. have their evidence, you know. It's just that we in the country, you know, we deny the truth, you know, and we sometimes covered up, and that is coming back to bite us. Simple as that, you know. And we have to clean it up. If we say we don't have a problem, you know, a lot of people don't know we have a problem. A lot of us have our own intuition, and we judge. I don't think there's no one out there influencing the Bahamian people to think otherwise. I think there's a lot of people out there who read between the lines, read the newspaper, and they have decided without a reasonable doubt that there's something going on in our country, and we need to fix, you know? And we have facts to prove it, like I said again. You know, we saw the officer 9 years ago, alleged to have knocked down a young man. He ain't had no drivers, he ain't had no insurance, he ain't had no license for the car, okay, to be on the streets of Nassau, Providence. And again, you know, he was not brought or questioned in a timely fashion, and the family had to keep at it, you know. So there's some truth to a lot of the matters in our country, and we can be besmirched, and people can be lying on us. But in many cases, if you look at it, there's enough proof there that states that we have a serious problem in our country. And we have some political critics who use their position, whether they're opposition to, like he said, Antoine stated, you know, to use it to their disadvantage within themselves, you know some of these things happening under their watch and under their administration. They remain quietly still. Because former Prime Minister Hubert Alexander Minnis, and he stated that as Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, in the last administration, he stated documents from the FBI concerning matters concerning individuals from both the boat community and the armed forces. And he himself, you know, didn't decide to investigate. So you can imagine that he said it. Why? Because again, there's a fraternity. And even him, he said it. The former prime minister said that. So it goes to show you there's a double standard. He said it at his own mouth that he got a complaint from the FBI concerning matters, concerning members from the force and from wherever government or politician involved in illegal activities. And he got this information and he didn't act on it. He said it. So it goes to show you double standard. You're part of an organization, they protect you, whether you're right or wrong. And there's no running around that. And then we as Bahamians, we take the full blame. Who on the streets? And all the pressure is put on us. That time, the biggest set of criminals are the ones who are to the very top. And then they use us as the scapegoat and say we are the problem when they are the gatekeepers and letting everything in the country and destroying the country and still trying to say they are right and they ain't do nothing wrong. And for that, we all got punished. Okay? For us who know truth and speak truth, continue to do so because you will get your blessings. It might seem like you're losing, but you're not losing because you're keeping yourself true. I want to say goodnight to each and every one of you.
And Valentino Brown, host of the talk show Inside the Inner City, that we mayors every Friday at 6:30 to 8 p.m. On the day we were talking about the price we're paying for corruption. We're talking about the result of allowing illegal activities to be covered up by our armed forces and government and protected. Now everything is coming to light. So I'm your host, Valentino Brown, aka Scrooge, or Scroogey. I want to thank Anton for calling in, and I would like to say a very good night to each and every one of you. And I'll see you next week of Godspell Life on Guiding Radio 96.9 FM.
What happened? Huh? Straight of the man died, babe, from being done. What are you doing to me, man? Oh,
look. Again? I represent Bahamian people. I from Nassau, Bahamas, big up Dayton, bro. Boy, I from Dayton, bro. Don't take no back talk, no bribe or no joke. If you find fire, you're definitely find smoke. Dayton, bro. Boy, I from Dayton, bro.